coming real different this week. It's the Raging Robot Party cast. I am Josh. That is Ryan. As you can recall, the purpose of our show, which we frequently don't do, is the frequent discussion and introducing new things to one another and just talking about things that we're passionate about. We are going to have our first guest who came on to talk about something that she is passionate about. Ryan, would you like to introduce her?
Yes, for anyone who's curious, once again, I am Ryan, once again with my co-host Josh. We have decided today to actually have, well, my mother on the podcast today to talk about, Miss Elena Gary, to talk about one of her favorite things. We thought it'd be a kind of special episode for Pride Month, kind of.
It's going to be a little late.
It's going to be a bit late. In the month, and it's going to be something we'll get into, why this is half Pride Month, half kind of not.
It was recorded during.
But today we decided to try and cover the topic of Cary Grant. If you'd like to take it away, Mom.
Cary Grant. Oh, he is one of my favorites and has been my entire life. I think my folks used to watch their movies growing up, with me growing up and stuff, and I think this is exactly where I got into him and his movies. We opened up with the Philadelphia Story in one of the music that they had there. Great movie with Jimmy Stewart, Katharine Hepburn, and Cary Grant. And he plays a great part in this, and Jimmy Stewart and him hit it off really well in this film as well. He had played several movies with Katharine Hepburn, and they became close friends, and played Bringing Up Baby was one of them that they played in together, and there were a couple of others. Ryan himself has had to grow up with my love for Cary Grant, and has pretty much had to sit there and watch every movie that I've ever seen of his. So he actually knows more facts, some of the facts that I do, and brings them to my attention.
Yeah. Hold on just 1 minute. Yeah, I remember growing up, you had a giant coffee book table with Cary Grant and I think Jimmy Stewart also, wasn't it?
Yes, I have those. They're so big that we have no room in our home for them.
Yeah.
So they're currently in the garage.
Then was it Katharine Hepburn?
Katharine Hepburn as well.
You're saying with the Philadelphia Story, that was quite a cast back in the golden era, right?
Yes, it was an all-star cast. In that movie where he plays the ex-husband of the soon-to-be remarried Katharine Hepburn, and she does not know that he's been invited to the wedding as a newspaper photographer writer to go ahead and cover the wedding. And so he's coming in with all kinds of secrets and as to why he's actually having to be there. But very, very good. If you haven't seen it, again, a classic, and one of my favorites to rewatch, a go-to on a cold, rainy night.
Tangentially related, can you tell that this character was designed, inspired by Katharine Hepburn?
This one there, the eyes, most definitely.
Yeah. We are showing an image of Relina Peacecraft from Mobile Suit Gundam Wing, and I always thought it was interesting that she was based on a classic movie character like Katharine Hepburn. I'm maybe thinking about Audrey Hepburn, come to think of it.
Audrey is another one. She's got actually both the eyes were both more like Katharine and Audrey, and Audrey had the black hair, and another good actor, and so it's... Not easily to confuse him up, but yes, by the last name, and if you're not familiar with him, then it is a little hard to do that. One of the things, the scenes in the Philadelphia Story is that he is, Jimmy Stewart sort of falls in like a little short love crush of Katharine Hepburn over the time that he's coming in as also part of the team that's supposed to write about the wedding. Back then, it was all about the social, high society social coverage of the wedding. And so it was Cary Grant and Jimmy Stewart and another actress that came in to cover the wedding. And so he kind of gets a chance to kind of meet her and flirt with her a little bit. And they have this one scene where he and Catherine, Jimmy Stewart and Catherine, are together and they're just kind of frolicking around the pool. And he has to go back to where his apartment or his home that he's staying in. And he goes to Cary Grant's place and knocks on the door. And Jimmy Stewart is a little drunk. And he goes and he wants to fight him over Catherine. And as it turns out, in the middle of that fight, Jimmy Stewart has a little hiccup. And it was unscripted. And you could see in their faces that they both kind of chuckled, but they both kind of went with it as part of the scene.
Well, that was a delightful surprise. We didn't have that in mind when we were filming that.
I was about to say, I think most people know Jimmy as It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
Yes.
Interesting story in and of itself with that film, but original flop. That it led it to rights lapse, and so that's how it ended up becoming a classic of holidays, is because television kept running it.
Yeah, that checks out.
Because it was free to run. But you're saying they did actually eventually, Audrey Hepburn and Cary Grant did do Charade together.
Yes, yes.
Which that was one of his working relationships with Hitchcock, wasn't it? Alfred Hitchcock?
Yes, he had good working relationship with Alfred Hitchcock. It was later in his career that Alfred Hitchcock kind of snatched him up after he left Paramount and decided to go ahead and cast him in several of his movies that he was in. Let me see what I've got here for those little notes there that he had. Hitchcock... Said about him that he actually was one of the only actors here that he really liked. In the 1940s and 50s, he worked and forged a relationship with Alfred Hitchcock, and he appeared in such films as Suspicion in 1941, Notorious, 1946, To Catch a Thief, 1955, and North by Northwest.
Oh, that's the famous where the plane is
the chasing airplane him. Scene yeah. Where it's coming, it's a crop duster that is coming to smoke him out there. And he actually runs into the field. And I don't know what they dropped in him on real life, but hopefully it wasn't crop dusting.
Well, I guess that one was actually Stanley Duden, who actually passed away just a few months ago. But, yeah, who also directed Singing in the Rain, huh?
Really?
Yes.
Well, it says that Hitchcock admired Grant and considered him the only actor that he had ever loved working with, which I can understand that. He's just so versatile. And so debonair. In some of his biographies, they talk about him... His early life with his mother, and in that it was, when he was seven, his mother had gone away, and as it turned out, his father had put her away into an asylum for 21 years.
Okay, that seems impolite of him.
Yeah, and didn't really tell him, and so in his five marriages that he had, he was trying to. It said that he had mother issues in regards to that because he was just trying to figure it all out and was taking it really out on the wives that he took. They didn't last a long time. His marriages didn't last a long time, but that seems to be why.
Makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. He worked a few other movies, as you've mentioned, Philadelphia Story. Is one of his big ones. I guess he got the Oscar nomination for Penny Serenade.
Yes. That is also one of his very
favorite. And None But the Lonely Heart.
Yes. Some of my favorites with that. He also did Touch of Mink with Doris Day, who just recently passed away also. But she had, in past interviews with her, she just spoke very, very highly of him.
Okay. Any other ones of the non-popular variety you remember? I remember us having a few, The Grass is Greener, I Was a Male War Bride, things like that that I don't think often get brought up when talking about him.
Arsenic and Lace, that one is pretty twisted.
I'm like, yes, that's a title I know.
Yeah, that's a little twisted. He is just fixing on running off with his fiance, and they are ready to elope, but he goes to see his two great old aunts and uncle. They all live together. And as they are, she goes to her house to get ready to elope with him. And so he goes and visits them, and they were actually next door neighbors. And as she goes to visit them, he goes to visit the aunts. He finds out later that his little widowed aunts, they actually would invite lonely men, lonely single men that were a little bit older, I guess like old bachelor age, that they would consider themselves. And they felt very sorry for him in a loving way. In doing so, they would invite them to stay with them, the two aunts. And in the end, they would end up serving them arsenic and killing them because they were just doing them a favor and putting them out of their misery. And then they would bury him in their basement. And that's where the crazy uncle came in and was part of that. And he portrayed himself as crazy Teddy Roosevelt. And so once he found out that his aunts were doing this, it became quite comical. And that's where his comedy aspect, he was very, very, later on in his career, was very considered a very comedic actor. Of his time.
I was expecting that story to go a different direction.
No. Those are the ones that you have to see when they come on your TV and you are flipping through the channels and they're there. Those are the ones that they are good to watch.
I was like, oh, this seems kind of saucy for the time. Oh, okay, they're killing them.
Okay. It's just murder. Yeah, we're talking later. I mean, early. That was one of his early black and white. So, yeah, quite a story. Yeah. For that day and age, murder and intrigue out of Cary Grant.
Yeah, I guess he was one of the ones in the golden age of comedy, or the golden age of Hollywood, free of me, in particular, that brought a lot of respect to comedies, because he started playing the comedies, and he played the leading man, and did it charmingly, and didn't ever play down just because he was doing a comedy role. So things like Operation Petticoat and Houseboat, Father Goose, but I guess we were watching that documentary that was saying that Father Goose wasn't nearly as popular as some of his other ones, but that's also way later career when he was trying to be not the leading man anymore.
That's correct. He changed his whole persona in Father Goose by coming the drunkard bachelor that had a fishing boat and just sort of sailed the island at the time when they were watching the Japanese come over Hawaii, and so they were wanting to keep an eye, and he was actually on one of the islands, and he was supposed to be reporting back to the naval bases if they saw any enemy airplanes flying over, at which point he ended up with a maroon, so to speak, busload of kids, which is the first time he's ever played acted with children, and it is said that he actually really enjoyed that, and he did that, and that was his second to his last film. But that was very good, but a role that nobody wanted to see, because debonair, handsome, good looking Cary Grant didn't play this scruffy bearded, not dressed well, islander kind of guy by himself, bachelor by himself. So it was hard for people to see him in that role. Hence, they didn't particularly flock to the theaters to see that. But ironically enough, that happens to be one of my mother's favorite movies that she still remembers to this day, being one of his best ones that he did.
It's interesting that that was a role for him that was not necessarily it's kind of like, I guess, the controversy tying into an anniversary this week where people didn't necessarily see Michael Keaton as Batman, but then later they actually saw the movie and were like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. And it's interesting that even back, way back in the early days of Hollywood, that people could perceive an actor to not be a certain way when, like, it's literally their job to go into a role and be something else, you know?
And the good actors like Carey, he was able to play all these roles. He had said in one of his bios that I watched here recently that he never believed himself to be Cary Grant. He always had his full name was Archibald Alec Leach, and so he always believed himself to be Archibald. And so in doing that, he aspired to be Cary Grant. And his entire acting career in trying to aspire to be Cary, it was sort of like almost a ghost that he kept trying to chase. Until the very end, most of the very end of his career is when he finally realized and believed that he had become and won, and they were one and the same. So you would think about this actor who is so debonair, so charmingly handsome, so awesomely good on screen with the leading ladies all the time, and not believe that that's who he could be or that he wanted to be. So that's kind of, he kind of had a tormented life in his early life, but worked through that also as later in his career.
Okay, yeah, that's definitely something that happened. One of the things you've mentioned a few different times here was his five different marriages.
Yes. He, one of his first marriage, he was married to Virginia. I think you say, how you say it, Sherelle?
I would probably call it Sherelle, yeah.
Sherelle. And he was married to her on February 9th in 1934. And she divorced him on March, so they were only married, but not a little over a year, in following charges that he hit her. And they were involved in a bitter divorce case, which was back then always, everything was always in the press. And she said that she was demanding $1,000 a week from him in benefits from the Paramount earnings. And that's when he had contracted with Paramount. And so the demise of the marriage, he dated actress Phyllis Brooks from 1937, and they considered marriage and vacation together in Europe, visiting Rome, the villa of Dorothy Del Fazio in Italy, but the relationship ended later that year. He was also married to Barbara Hutton, and she had a lot of money. She was very, very wealthy. One of the wealthiest women at that time around. And many people touted him as going after her money. And he had a nickname out there in Hollywood, which he didn't care for at all, which was Cash and Carry. You can't really blame him for that. But and it said that later when they did divorce back then, which would have been kind of a prenup, he had put that if anything had happened to her, that he was not after her fortune, that he didn't want anything in regards to her money.
That's cool.
So that tells you that he actually, you know, a man above his time, many probably would have gone after the money.
Yeah. Many probably would have married for it.
Exactly. And he was a rising star at that time, so I'm sure he was coming into his own money. She had a $50 million inheritance from her grandfather, and that was... many of you, I don't know if you know of the store, the Woolworths.
Yes.
The Five and Dime, Woolworth Five and Dime. And that's where her money came from.
Hmm.
So if he wanted it, you know, he could have had it. But for him to sign off and say, no, thank you, again, to me, that's why I am such a big fan of his. He also married Diane Cannon, and Diane Cannon, she was much younger than he was, but she actually is the only one that gave him a child, and that was Jennifer. And the day that Jennifer was born, his life had changed. And he said that he thinks that I've come to think that the reason why we've been put on earth is to procreate, to leave something behind, not films, because you know that I don't think my films will last long once I'm gone. But another human being, that's what's important. So he lived for her, through her, to make sure that she had a wonderful, wonderful childhood. And being an older father, he did a very good job at that, because he felt as though his childhood was not quite what he wanted it to be. And so he made sure that Jennifer had the loving life that he didn't have. But he too divorced Diane. They divorced in March of 1968. And so that was the end of that marriage. But he stayed very, very close to her. So,
One of the other things that was a constant rumor in and throughout his life, and that was kind of what I was saying earlier with the semi-Pride Month episode, being that for a very long time, he lived with another actor in Hollywood.
Randolph Scott.
Yes.
On and off for 12 years.
Now, there always were rumors that they were in a relationship, but later people have never found any evidence of it.
I think that quite possibly he could have had, with his volatile childhood that he had had, and with the mother issues that he had had, it is said that he had a very hard time relating with the women, his leading ladies, with his personal life. He just had a very tough time with that, and could have forged deeper friendships with his co-stars, with his male co-stars, or, you know, his male colleagues out there, and deeper friendships on that part, which could have sparked a lot of that may have gone on. Like you said, if they hadn't found no evidence of that, then that would be something that I'm sure would have just probably been right out there at the very beginning. And again, it was all rumored.
It was. I guess, forgive the use of a slur I'm quoting here, I guess he had Chevy Chase had actively come out and joked that he was a homo on one of his shows. And I guess Chevy Chase got sued for slander because of that, and was forced to redact the statement. I know his daughter has also come out and said that he kind of liked the idea, because it meant that woman would try and prove that he wasn't gay, and that he kind of played into that idea a little bit. But it was also claimed later down the line by a costume maker, I believe, that they were in a relationship at one point in time, but he's someone that claims a couple hundred women, I believe, too. So it's tough to say whether or not those rumors are real and have persisted.
I mean, sexuality is fairly fluid. You can like both, and it's fine.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, I'm not saying anything like that.
My take is, you know, it's your business at the end of the day, so.
It made absolutely no difference to me one way or the other. I loved Cary Grant. And to this day, I have several movies of his in my DVD library here at the house. So, and I actually just showed where I work my residence, The Bishop's Wife, which, again, is a great, great Christmas flick. It comes out during the holidays, The Bishop's Wife. Make sure to watch that one. I can name a lot of them. They are good rainy day, sunny day, any day, kind of lay on your couch all day long and watch Cary Grant. It's easy to fall in love with this actor. The only actor to this day that I liken him to is Pierce Brosnan. That English kind of guy that it's just, I just don't see a lot of actors that come close. And I could be wrong. What are your thoughts on that, guys? Because as you can tell, I'm highly prejudiced in this matter of Cary. Do you see anybody that kind of plays into that persona, that magnitude in your generation? I just have a hard time with that.
Not really. I also question, it's also maybe one of the things that's kind of dying in my generation, is that virgin and image of Cary Grant, that perfect male, perfect tan, overly handsome style. I think you see it a lot nowadays in television, but yeah, not so much on the screen. I mean, I guess you still have some actors, as you said, Pierce Brosnan, I might add Johnny Depp's name onto that list, that kind of play off their suaveness.
The only person who came to mind was Chris Evans, but I don't know if he counts as suave necessarily. He just comes across as a nice dude and is handsome, so.
Yeah, as you said, and as I said, the comedies he worked on are way more well-respected than being considered a comedic actor nowadays. And I think that's the second thing. I'm trying to think of, yeah, people that would have played off their suave leading man like that.
Well, I know that in a mild sprinkling of research for the show on the possibility of Cary Grant being bi, it was brought to my attention that Marlon Brando might also have been.
Right.
And I was like, I did not know that. But
yeah, Marlon Brando was rumored. Rock Hudson, but I believe
Rock Hudson for sure.
Rock Hudson was. Yeah. Yes.
And that Hollywood actually confirmed. One of the studios arranged his marriage for him, right?
Yeah.
Right.
As a public publicity stunt to pull people away.
Grandmother, who is no longer with us, was a big Rock Hudson fan, but she actually denied everything up to his death. But I'm like, no, it's pretty well confirmed there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, it's Hollywood's pretty gay, and that's fine.
And one of those, and another
We're
one of those,
for you.
One of those handsome leading men that he was. He was very, very handsome and just, again, played with his, with his female co-stars. You know, these men just played the part, and you just loved them because they were everything you wanted, you thought you wanted to be. You know, it was just, I think you were just kind of in awe of them. And in listening to you two talk about not being able to come up with anybody,
yeah.
Or at least only a couple of names that you're able to throw out there. And I think it speaks a lot of Hollywood actors in those times and the way that they came up into their stardom and actually their legacy that they've left behind, and their legend kind of stuff, persona.
Yeah, the only other person I had on the tip of my tongue was Robert Downey Jr., only because of a definite rise, then super hard fall, and then rise again to a different sort of persona, and now he's basically a public figure, you know, who visits like children and hospitals and that sort of thing.
Yeah, he's definitely another one. I'm looking at another list, though I don't agree with some of these. There are a few from that time. Sean Connery, but again, he was almost just barely after Cary Grant's generation of that golden era.
Right.
The original James Bond. Would have been curious to see if Grant could have pulled off a Bond.
You know, they looked to him.
Did they?
In that role, yes. They did look to him to see if he wanted that role, and he had said no.
Others are saying Steve McQueen from another one from that time.
Oh, yeah. Steve McQueen for sure.
Errol Flynn.
Errol Flynn. Yes.
Was James Dean too late?
Yes. Yes.
Well, I think James Dean's almost that next generation of Hollywood where you went from the suave to that more manly version of the super machos in there.
The bad boys.
That's kind of what James Dean kicked off. And now I think it's, and that's what I was saying, is it's the sensitive broken is now has a tendency to be the leading man nowadays, which is why I don't think that suave version of everyone smoking cigarettes at every point in time in the film really exists anymore.
No, nobody really wants you smoking on film anymore.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if that can get you an R rating nowadays. Some of these films will probably get R ratings just based off pure number of cigarettes that appear on the screen. But, yeah, there are very few actors like him. And very few that came after him, too. Are there any others that you can really think of that golden age that you liked? You said Jimmy Stewart.
Jimmy Stewart. I really, really like him. He, too, has a comedic part in him that he plays as an actor, and it's very good. And yet he can turn and play a very suspenseful, like, rearview mirror. In that movie, where he played in that movie. And so they are just so versatile and can come and play such great leading men in such great roles that I think that Hollywood is kind of, and I, like, again, I'm very biased and very prejudiced and very biased in coming up with, and honestly, I would like to see some of your generation actors at least come up and aspire to, but it's a whole totally different time. Movies back then and that we watched, that I watched with my parents, all the Cary Grant movies, they were just good family movies that obviously, even as a child, warmed my heart and warmed others' hearts and stuff, and sitting there watching them, because why would they have such an impact back then? And I don't know if your generation has that kind of following or to be able to have those memories, you know, in watching today's movies. It's just a totally different time. Kind of sad that it has gone away, but lucky for us, it did play out. Lucky for me, it played out. Otherwise, I wouldn't be such a big fan.
And everything is archived more than ever now.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of it's preserved. There's no such thing. There is still such thing as lost films and lost movies and things like that, but it's all preserved and remembered. Were you saying it was the actual leading man who walked out Run, his final movie where Cary Grant wasn't actually the leading man?
Yes.
Emulated him in a later film, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. He died soon after that movie. And he did not want to play at that time in his life. He did not want to play the leading man any longer. He had come into his own. He knew who he was, and he didn't have to prove himself any longer. He was at peace with who he was. So being the leading man, Cary Grant, no longer was important to him. He was Cary Grant, and he had nothing more to prove to anybody. And so for him to take a back seat in a movie such as that was probably pretty big at that time, because, you know, he was Cary Grant, and so why not cast him as the leading star? But he chose to take a back seat in that particular movie.
Didn't know that. I guess he was in Gunga Din.
Yes, he was.
What do you think his first big film was, though?
You know, there's a lot of black and whites that he has done. I only know the ones that I know that I enjoy. I'm not sure which one that they would coin. It's in going through his biography and watching it, there were so many there that I had no idea that he was in. but I would have to date back. I'd have to go into the 30s, and I don't think that I watched many or any of his movies back then. And it doesn't, I just never saw him as being old in any of his movies, but he was born. Let's see what year he was born here.
1904.
Yes, 1904.
Oh, jeez.
I know, that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
I never thought of him as being that old in any of his movies because he never looked that old. He just aged so well. I just don't think that your actors today are aging as well as he is.
You have some. Brad Pitt's another one that at least ages. You have others like Leonardo DiCaprio, where he just sort of appears to stay the same age.
If you get old, they just fix it in post.
Yeah. Well, I've shown you some of the MCU tech, where if you get old, they just put a new face on top of your old face.
They just Jeff Bridges and Tron,
yeah. Yeah. Jeff Bridges or, what's his name in Guardians of the Galaxy 2? Kurt Russell,
yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't always look great, but they're trying.
You guys ever seen that movie Drive with Ryan Gosling?
Mm-mm.
You should.
Now, another one, I guess Ryan Gosling would be another one that could definitely be like Cary Grant, where it's that suaveness, but...
When you think about it, he's done a musical, he has movies that aren't necessarily action movies, but are kind of action movie adjacent, to where he plays a very stern, serious man. He's in Blade Runner 2049, The Notebook. So he's kind of a jack of all trades and just low-key established that for himself.
Well, I know that he seems to try and keep himself more of an indie star.
Yeah. I'd say he broke big in the last couple of years, even though those movies may not necessarily have done as well in the U.S. I'm sure Blade Runner made him some bank.
Most likely did, and then I doubt you were never a huge fan of him, but the musical that you didn't really care for.
La La Land.
La La Land, yeah.
Oh my god.
The first person I've heard that not like
that one.
I was not a big fan of La La Land. It just didn't hit the mark for me. But it got raving reviews, and did it get the Academy that year?
It won something.
It did win something.
It won the Academy Award, and I think that's the one that very famously was announced as the wrong film.
Oh, yeah.
And so they announced one, that people came up, and then the director of that grabbed the card, looked at it, and went, "No, we didn't win. La La Land won instead."
They tried to pull the old Montreal screw job on him.
Maybe. The Academy Award, that's just how it works now.
Boy,
is any different things.
I remember that.
Play the music!
I don't know. Do you think there's anyone that can still make a Golden Age film like they did in Hollywood at this point in time?
In today's actors?
In today's actors or filmmakers?
Let me think. You know, I see all your action films. I see all your sci-fi films. I see all your murder films and the likes and stuff. And I don't know. I don't see a lot of the Golden Age kind of movies have come up. I'm just trying to go back in my current movie library in my head and try to think of one that just really was really, really, really good. And I'm kind of drawing a blank.
Well, I guess a lot of the Golden Age movies would be more art house films, I think is what they would be considered today. And I think art house films in today's culture have a tendency to be over the edge. Almost everything has to be knocked up a level, so everything can't sort of be that fun family level anymore. If you're going to be an art house film, if you're going to be a drama, you're going to have the most drama ever made. Yeah, everyone's going to be dying or something like that. Everyone's going to be sick. Your life is going to be terrible no matter what you do.
Yeah, there's a lot of genre of teenagers dying of bad illnesses that's become a thing because of various novels being adapted into movies, and I'm just like, is this a genre now?
Yeah, Nicholas Sparks.
Well, not even Nicholas Sparks, like The Fault in Our Stars, If I Stay, all that. I'm just like, these are all like
no,
the
I guess
same
that's
story.
John Green.
Yeah.
John Green is Fault in Our Stars and a few of those, 5 feet apart.
That one I don't know, but I saw most of those movies because of my family. And I'm just like, okay, I guess this is what we do now.
Yeah, the teenager dying, and I don't know. It's hard to say. Some of these people are remembered well. Some people remember Alfred Hitchcock well. Some people like to talk about the fact that Alfred Hitchcock was kind of a terrible person at certain points in time, too. And that's another reason that Hitchcock's so well remembered. And, yeah, it comes back to, I don't even know if there are a lot of directors that can pull off the story of a Golden Age film anymore. Not even actors. The Golden Age of Hollywood was just such a different time and place. And I mean, a lot of people, as I said, are trying to destroy it right now. That persona of the leading man isn't necessarily seen as a good thing anymore. And we had a discussion during the Ghostbusters episode that talked about the fact Bill Murray, a lot of his films even, are getting called into question because the lovable jerk isn't something in today's society. People just see Bill Murray playing those movies as a jerk, and people see him as a jerk. And that's all they're ever going to see him as. They don't really see him get redeemed in the films anymore.
Yeah, it depends from movie to movie, I would think.
It does. And that's the issue, is Murray's character was so well established in so many films. Scrooged.
Like, who is he a jerk to in Caddyshack? The gopher? Like,
somebody argued Chevy Chase, but that was a real life
rivalry.
Yeah, but
Chevy Chase is also a jerk.
About to say that's both of them, and that was a real life, but that's beside the point. Now, yeah, there's a few different films. You have things like Meatball, where he doesn't redeem himself, he just stays that same character the whole entire film. But
that's one of my favorites of his. I really like that one.
Yeah.
He's got his sense of humor in that one, his one-liners and stuff in that movie. All of them really, really good.
My favorite Bill Murray film is Garfield, A Tale of Two Kitties.
You ever hear how he ended up making those?
Yes, because I believe it was basically just a mistake to where he got a call from the Coen brothers or something who said that they were going to make a movie and left it on his voicemail and he mixed it up or something.
It was, hold on. It was written by Joel and Alec, Joel Coen.
Yeah, and it was
and
the wrong
Coen.
He saw
the name Coen, and he thought it was the Coen brothers, who was another current legendary filmmakers, and he ended up signing up and getting two movies.
Yeah, it's just funny to me that
he basically sits through the whole entire time.
It's just funny to me that the voice of Garfield played Peter Venkman on the Ghostbusters cartoon, and then Peter Venkman, Bill Murray, played Garfield on the movie.
Which Garfield show, the CGI or the 1990s one?
The good one. Garfield and Friends.
The 1990 has one or two good episodes, or the CGI has one or two good bits in it.
It's just weird and French.
It is.
No offense to any French listeners. We welcome you still. Sorry, I just insulted your Garfield cartoon.
But one of the things I think to talk about that we kind of hit on earlier is, and as we're having a discussion, the big change in comedy is, I do think, also. Comedy nowadays, and I can't help but wonder if we went too hard on some of the outsiders and the people that were doing what they were doing at the time, being incredible. But now we went too hard concentrating on those people, your Pryors, your Chris Rocks, your Louis C.K.'s.
Oh, he's canceled.
I was about to say, he's canceled, but at a point in time, he did have a full stand-up career and was considered a good one.
Yeah, well, he's not anymore.
No, he's not. No, what he did was horrible. But George Carlin, Bill Burr's, things like that, where we concentrate too hard on those people and that they kind of sort of, we concentrate only on their inappropriateness. And that's sort of what comedy's become nowadays, is a lot of people believe it's supposed to be offensive.
You're out for romanticizing the Belushi era.
Yeah. Your Belushis. Well, yeah. You know, your Belushis, your Candies, the unfortunately overly drugged people on set.
Yeah. They weren't built to last.
No. Unfortunately not. Chris Farley.
I do miss Chris Farley. It's funny how they made two of the exact same movie, and I still love both of them.
Yeah.
It's like, sometimes I literally mix up the plot points of Tommy Boy and Black Sheep in my head, and I'm like, oh yeah, that was the other one. Oh well, it's still good.
They are. But I guess, would that also be Plane, Trains, and Automobiles kind of the same, or not really?
I mean, it's classic by standards, so...
Steve Martin, another one that came after Cary Grant, but I think was kind of that follow-up generation.
Yes.
Steve Martin's pretty great.
He is. Just nowadays, don't ask him about comedy if you want to talk to him. Banjo.
Yeah.
That's what you talk to Steve Martin about nowadays. The banjo and nothing else. But
I miss Leslie Nielsen.
Another great one.
Don't call me Shirley.
Well, I was saying, Leslie did a few... He had a few back in those days.
Yeah, he was actually like a serious actor in his time.
Was.
And I did not know that. I just knew his comedy. And I was like, oh, okay, that's why he's so good just playing it completely straight in Police Squad and The Naked Gun.
Right, and Airplane. He actually did a sitcom, a detective show, I think. I'm trying to think which one it was. In the 60s and early 70s. And so I can't remember. Do you remember which one that one is, or do you have that?
I just know Police Squad.
Yeah. Well, I'm about to say Police Squad.
Which lasted five episodes, maybe six.
Yes.
Well, that eventually is what The Naked Gun's based off of, right?
Yeah, pretty much all six episodes make up the first movie. Did they just reuse bits out of it anyway in it?
But yeah, because, what's your favorite? Tammy and the Bachelor?
Yes. And the Bobby Sox. Yes. And the Bobby Sox.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's always the one that I was seeing the first time I've ever seen young Leslie Nielsen in a film. But yeah, just, there aren't a lot of movies, because I guess a lot of what you're saying is a lot of the comedies relate closer to, like, Arsenic and Lace than to say something like Operation Petticoat or Houseboat or Father Goose, where the comedy's more physical, too.
Right. You know, his early career was in Broadville.
Yeah, Vaudeville.
Vaudeville. And he was quite... he stayed in New York when he joined the troupe back in England when they came to New York. And decided that there was nothing for him back there, and so he did circuses and stilts to pay for his way while he was trying to become an up and rising. And you can see a lot of those physical stunts that he did were not by accident; they were very deliberate because that was who he was in becoming. You know, the young Cary Grant. Is that little slapstick fall down, do the tumble, whatever it was all very real for him.
Now, do you think there anything that doesn't hold up in today's, any of his films, do you think don't hold up anymore? Or?
As in, they've kind of fallen off the wayside?
Well, they've kind of fallen off the wayside, or they're just not quite as good. I was about to say, I remember we mentioned it, but you're not actually the biggest fan of the Alfred Hitchcock era, right?
No. I just didn't. I couldn't get into that little mystery intrigue with his. And even in the movies that Cary played in the Alfred Hitchcock, they were all kind of like, there was a lot of mystery in there in the movies. And for me, it was taking him out of a role that I didn't.
Leading romantic comedy,
right,
man,
yes.
Going into a mystery.
Yes, going into that mystery kind of guy. And so that's where I kind of fell off a little bit with the Hitchcock movies.
To Catch a Thief?
To Catch a Thief was good. It was very good.
That one, I think, would have been, still more the middle ground, right?
Right. Where he didn't cross way over, because he still played that leading debonair with Grace Kelly. And they had a very good on-screen, off-screen relationship.
Yeah. North by Northwest, of course, being the kind of the straight, but as you said, one of his most famous, the Dust Cropper and all that.
And I know that just a lot of the differences between then and today, like you mentioned vaudeville. Vaudeville has largely died, but it still lives on as an evolution into professional wrestling. When you really think about it, it's got all the aspects of it. We also, I guess, Broadway. We still have Broadway going. It's still good. You got your big shows like Hamilton and adaptations like The Lion King and that sort of thing. But I feel like it's also the best of that era all unfortunately died, because the best writers and all that died of AIDS, unfortunately, because our government just kind of sat on their hands while that was happening. So,
yeah, it's definitely tragic up there. There's definitely a lot of good on the stage, and forgive us, we're Americans. I know stage acting is way bigger in, like, England, where that is what you're supposed to go for first. You don't go into films like you do here in America. You go to stage first, and then you go and make your way into films after that, but...
There's a lot of that I did not know that it has actually bled over into our stuff. Like, the director of the first Thor movie was actually a Shakespearean guy.
Yeah.
Who handled productions like that before he did Thor.
Yeah, and when you look up certain actors, I guess to kind of finish, one of the things on Cary Grant's thing is he was kind of one of the first that did that speaking thing. The conversation with Cary Grant.
That's right. That was again towards the end of his career, after he had went ahead and stepped out of films, and that's kind of what he wanted to do, and that's where they had said that he had actually become and grown into the persona Cary Grant. He didn't want it to be about all about him and having it staged. He just wanted it to be as we're doing here today. Just back and forth and talking and having a regular conversation like a regular guy. And that's where he came into being at peace with who he was, to finally becoming just a regular guy and not having to prove himself any longer.
Yeah, he had died backstage at one of those, I believe, right? And what it sounds like. He would come out, show a few clips of his thing, talk to the audience for a little bit, and then he would take questions. And I think that was back in the day that actors really didn't do that. That was well before things like Inside Actor Studio and things like that kind of made it more popular.
With James Lipton.
And I would like to hear Lisa now, if you wouldn't mind. like I said, there's just no one else that was like him.
I would like to see... In your generation, I'd like to see someone arise and aspire to. But again, it is the day of the golden age. It's just kind of come and gone. And it's probably, if I was more movie savvy as to what is out there these days, there may be somebody out there that I would just really, really enjoy. But growing up and just being kind of spoiled in regards to the era of movies and the family qualities and just good storylines, very, real life storylines and stuff. And that's, you just don't get that.
Yeah.
I'm afraid in today's movies, wholesome movies, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Oh, no, they still make those, but on a certain platform. You got to go to PureFlix for that.
Yeah, about to say it's kids' films and semi-Christian films, quote unquote. But
well, that's true. And the one that keeps to mind is the one that you and I went to go see. I Can Only Imagine. That had all the drama and everything in it. But
yeah,
you know, It had an actual storyline, and I guess I miss that. I miss that in movies, is a really good storyline.
But I don't miss Kirk Cameron.
Not really. Now, I can only imagine it was definitely good, depending how cynical you want to be. But
why are you looking at me like you know no. I'm a heathen?
No, I'm staring at Nikki, sorry. I wasn't looking at you. Yeah, I was just laughing. Yeah, there's one review that I read of that film that the only thing it concentrated on was how much money that song has actually made and continues to make. And that's the only thing they talked about. And they're like, it sits over the whole entire film. I'm like, that's just being too cynical, man. It doesn't need to be said. But
show note, if there was a bunch of screaming in the background of this episode, I'd never heard it picked up on the headset, but it seemed like there were children playing outside while we were recording, and there's naturally, since there's children playing, there is screaming.
Yeah, so unfortunately, one of my neighbor's kids is out there.
Yeah.
Luckily, Mother Nature decided to work with us and not give us thunder and rain like we did last night, but...
So, yeah, everyone's fine.
Yeah. Everything's good. Everything's fine.
Right. I think that's a show.
So do I. You want to head us over to the Shill Zone?
And the Southern...
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that...
I got me 10 fine toes to wiggle.
I wasn't ready to do the Shill Zone segment. I was going to do it on the next episode, but that's all right. We're here now, so I'll do it. As always, we've got the same stuff we've always got. We've got our Patreon. Subscribe to us. You'll get a thing eventually, be it a sticker, a button, maybe a bumper sticker, a magnet. We're working on it. Otherwise, we have the Redbubble site, redbubble.com/r-r-partycast. Needlessly complex, because they wouldn't have us... let us have our full name in the URL. But you can buy a shirt or a ridiculous throw pillow there if you so choose. As always, thank you to our patrons. Ryan, if you want to do the names.
Thank you, of course, my father, William Boyle.
And we got Ty and Claire, as always.
Ty and Claire, as always, yes. Thank you very much for being there. And, of course, as always, a free way to support the show. Like, share, and subscribe to our podcast. Shoot us an email, ragingrobotpartycast@gmail.com.
I'm going to check our email.
That is, yeah.
I bet there's nothing in it.
ragingrobotpartycast@gmail.com. Let's see if we've actually gotten any emails. Other than sticker mule giveaways.
No.
Unfortunately not, yeah. And I believe we're going to call that a show. Thank you all once again for listening.
You're here. That moment's near. I'm almost in.